At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Happily, I welcome Professor John Cochran of Stanford University, an esteemed member at the Hoover Institution, who keeps the Grumpy Economist blog. And coincidentally, John has posted recently remarks about a planned economy, central planned economy, and much evidence of it being recommended in the United States as late as a Gerald Ford administration of 1974 to 76. It's coincidence, but I'm reading a new book by Professor Sean McMeekin, Overthrow the World, about the rise and fall and rise again of communism, central planning, as a recommendation of how to govern. It is replete with examples of failure again and again and again. The government not only cannot pick winners, it invariably winds up corrupting everybody in the system. The Soviet Union is an example, but other states abound between now and back then, when Karl Marx wrote Das Kapital with a phrase-making genius, but with no understanding of capitalism or how the world works. John, a very good evening to you. This planned economy, I would have gotten the answer wrong if there was a multiple choice and it said, when was the last time the United States talked about a planned economy? I would have guessed something around McKinley, or maybe not Cleveland. McKinley would have been my guess. However, it turns out it was as recent as the transition from Gerald Ford to Jimmy Carter, and even Hubert Humphrey got involved. What were they thinking? What did they think a planned economy was? Good evening to you, John.
Good evening, yes. I got a shout out here to my good friend, Jesus Fernandez Villaverde, who put together all those quotes on my blog from the New York Times. He's doing a great job teaching free markets at Penn, and I just passed those along from an email. But yes, it's very interesting. The sentiment stays with us even today, but the words planned economy, rational planning, lasted well into the 1960s and 1970s. Took over really in the U.S. It became popular in the 1930s. We forget just how openly communist and statist and all those other nasty words was the impetus of the Roosevelt administration was. In some sense, economists have said Keynes saved us by substituting aggregate demand for the need. It was widely assumed that the government needed to plan everything. But even during and after the war, the wars are a planned economy. And after the war, many people, all the sort of right-thinking people who write in the New York Times, thought that the rational thing to do would be for the government to plan things. Because, of course, if you plan it, you can avoid all the inefficiencies and chaoses and other market failures of the market. Turns out it never works, does it?
It not only doesn't work, I want to use an example that just flashed as a news item these last days. Intel receives X number of billion dollars on the CHIPS Act. And I remember reading the CHIPS Act when it was first in the news. And part of it was mandating nurseries and childcare and educating people to be helpmates of the working people and then sending people to college to learn how to make chips. Isn't that a planned economy, John?
And union labor requirements, Made in America requirements, environmental requirements, consulting with native tribes on their ways of knowing requirements and so forth. Yes, one of the problems is that industrial policy subsidies, protections, always, especially in the U.S., which is a responsive democracy, end up being subverted to all the various political interests who want a slice of the pie, and then they eat the pie and not much is left. The fundamental problem of planning is information. So it seems, why can't the planners in Washington allocate things where it belongs to go? But they don't have the knowledge to do it. I happen to need right now a 1/16 inch drill bit for a project I'm doing for my daughter. How is the central planner to know that John Cochran needs a 1/16 inch drill bit? Only I know I need that drill bit. I go down to the grocery store. To the hardware store. I buy my drill bit. That information is the kind of thing that the planner can never have. And that's why it always falls apart, as well as the kind of political diversions, the crony capitalism that it goes to in the United States, all the other ways that it goes wrong.
And the impulse for planned economy, we can presume that it's strongest in the progressive part of the Democratic Party, which is just now stepping away from control in Washington, but it'll be back. We have a system not unlike the British. Everybody's always in the room. Sometimes you're majority, sometimes you're not. But you have expectation of coming back. And you could say the shadow economists in the Democratic Party have confidence in planned economy, that at a central planning, no matter how many times we say Solyndra, it'll happen again, John?
Well, the words planning kind of fell out of favor once the curtain was ripped back over what was going on in the Soviet Union. In the 1970s, people honestly thought that the Russians were doing great, the propaganda worked, and when we looked inside and found out how hollow the thing was, then those words are no longer popular. The sentiment's still there on left and right. Fascist economies were highly planned by the central government. And the idea us, the elite in Washington, have to move things around and tell people what to do remains very, very strong. The idea that the markets on their own are just horrendously inefficient, corrupt, prone to exploitation, capitalism, inequality. We have to run things. We, the self-appointed elite, have to run things. That's very strong on the left and not entirely absent on the right. They are not right now. The national conservatives are not right now deep into free market innovation, let people do what they want. They also have ideas about where things should go, and they're going to run it from Washington.
We come then to a hesitation about regulation. This is from John Cochran's Grumpy Economist blog. Michelle Bowman is a federal governor, therefore one of the cognoscenti, one of the elite, but giving remarks most recently hesitant about policy because it has unintended consequences, and best to choose what is called data-dependent, I believe, policy. You, in your remarks about Ms. Bowman's speech, wish she'd been more specific, and I take it that those of you who know the secrets of the Fed, you're one of them, John, are aware of the fact that there are policies in there that must be reformed, but they don't get to it. Can we understand, does the Fed have hesitation about policy, or does it keep bashing on ahead and worry about it later?
Oh, it has lots of hesitations, and it has an enormous underbelly of especially financial regulation, where rules are churned out page after page, day after day. Michelle Bowman gave a very nice speech, which occasionally I like to say something nice about. And I thought it was worth giving her credit for the speech. One of the things she said, a very important principle, is that we shouldn't be looking for, we shouldn't have answers in search of questions. We should state the question and then find the answer. So that little principle could make a big difference in how Washington goes about regulating things. But the Fed is certainly, for example, how did they screw up on inflation? What are we going to do about it? Big question. How did they miss Silicon Valley Bank? What are we going to do about it? Big question. How is financial regulation going to go on in the future? Big question. And of course, trying to restrain political influences like use financial regulation for climate policy. Big question.
John, I get to the matter where it was no longer English, and it worries me. Rules like supplementary leverage ratio or the G/SIB surcharge or liquidity coverage ratio. I've never seen those words in my life. What is that?
Well, you need to learn to speak central bankerese there, John. Now, in some sense, they're deliberately obscure. In response to the financial crisis, our government, at least to its credit, said we got to do something about this. We don't want this happening over and over again. So they let loose this horrendous amount of regulation. on banks. It's kind of funny. Where is there risk in the economy? There are no regulators looking at Tesla's rocket ships to Mars, but there's regulators all over the place looking at these portfolios of debt securities. What's up with that? Well, of course, Tesla's rocket ships to Mars aren't guaranteed by the government, and they're not financed by short-term debt, which can cause a financial crisis. So we allow banks to leverage up like crazy and then pretend that these hundreds of thousands of pages of rules are going to keep them out of trouble again. Well, we'll see about that. And these are among the hundreds of thousands of pages of rules. Now, to your previous point, all those fancy rules are interesting because the Fed realized they weren't working. There's been a lot of hiccups in the Treasury market lately, and the Fed has realized for a couple of years that these rules designed to keep banks safe are also keeping banks from doing what they're supposed to do, buy treasuries, provide liquidity, make loans, do all those stuff. They're just following the rules. And this has kind of been a open wound for a couple of years that the Fed has been unable to get around to fixing.
Cockroaches. John uses an example in his blog about cockroaches. And those of you who've lived in an apartment in New York appreciate this. If there are 1,000 cockroaches and now there are only 3 because you've done a good job, don't stop doing a good job. Does the Fed have that rule, John? It should be the cockroach rule about inflation. Does it have it?
Well, my worry is no. As you saw, the Fed raised interest rates. Finally, inflation broke out. Fed waited an entire year, raised interest rates. Inflation came down. We'll talk about because or despite some other day, but at least they're doing finally what they're supposed to do. Then this last summer, with inflation mostly down around 3%, they said time to ease off and start lowering rates again. At the point, yeah, like your apartment used to have 1,000 cockroaches, you swatted them all, you're down to 3. That does not mean you're on a glide path to a soft landing. That means you got to really work hard on the last 3, because you know what happens if there's 3 cockroaches. There's a cockroach mating party, and next thing you know, here it comes. So I would have rather that they really made clear we are going to keep after inflation till it's totally dead and gone, especially with the economy continuing to be quite as strong. And we'll see where things go.
I'm speaking to John Cochran, Professor John Cochran at Stanford University. I'm Hoover Fellow, writing his blog, The Grumpy Economist. We're headed to Europe, where central planning meets climate change. And the result? I'm John Batchelor.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms. At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms. At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.